Welcome to the Pastor and Intern Podcast. My name is Eric. I'm the pastor on the podcast. I'm here with Will, the intern. Will, how's it going?
It's going great.
It's going great.
Going good.
Man, your life is good all the time.
It is, all the time.
I'm impressed.
All the time my life is good. Man, my life is good.
Couldn't we just all have Will's life? I think that's, well, that's the thing on this podcast. And we also have Jenna. Jenna, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
You're doing good. So I saw that your song was still on top of the charts.
It is.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Still kicking. Still doing pretty good.
Look at you. Just pumping them out.
I know.
We've got another one ready to put on there whenever this one starts dropping.
So is that how it works with like music? Does it like you wait until one like starts going down and then you like put out another one?
Yeah. I mean, as long as you do have like, you know, other songs to put up there.
Sure.
Okay.
So I mean, album or the EP that I just released a few months ago, or like 2 months ago, is like the first like pretty long EP. I'd only put out like 3 songs before that, and this one was like 7 or 8 on there.
Okay.
So like I have like a good amount still, like, you know, in the background that I can release them.
So you just release them as like singles or something, and then I never knew that. I always thought like,
okay,
you like created a new song and then it was like discovered as a single. I didn't know you like put it out.
No. I mean, you can even look at, I mean, like big names like Taylor Swift and stuff like that. Like, she'll put out an album and then you'll notice that there's like one main song off of that album that's getting played constantly.
Right.
Yeah. So
and that's her choice. She just chose.
Yeah. Oh. So how do you choose the song?
I didn't know that.
Great.
You pick which one you think is going to do best, I guess, or you just pick which, I don't know.
Do you pick the one?
Their artists probably just don't have a say, and their manager picks it, or their producer picks it for them.
I was about to say, they probably have some guy in a closet somewhere that's like, okay, I want you to listen to all these songs, and you pick the one you think people like.
That's kind of what my manager / producer, I mean, the same person for this EP, but that's kind of what he did. I mean, we all had the same idea as what song we wanted to put out first, because we felt like that was like the strongest one and could do the best right off the bat.
Yeah.
So
I'm telling you, Taylor Swift has some guy with skinny jeans and a faux hawk in a closet somewhere, and she's like, listen to these songs.
Have you seen her new music video, by the way?
No.
I stopped listening to her a while ago. She kind of annoys
me. The one
now.
About
I can't do her. I was
a man or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I did. I saw part of it.
And
I saw
she's
like a
the guy in the music video is her.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, I guess it's the thing to do now. I don't know.
Why can't we stay with like Shake It Off? Why did we
for
have
real?
To go all politics?
Why
and
you, yeah,
garbage
why,
like
we should
that.
Talk
that's
about that on the podcast.
That's what annoys me. Yeah, because I was. I'm about to go into a rant.
Her documentary. That was fun.
Yeah, I will not watch that. But
I didn't watch.
I can't stand it when like musicians and actors and people try to like just shove their politics, their political views down your throat constantly. Like, I just want to listen to your music. Like,
I
don't want to hear your political views.
I just find it disappointing because I have like this high view of this person. And then they go on Twitter and they're like, abortion for everyone, you know? And you're like, man, that's really...
you just ruined your music
really
for me.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, I think what's more frustrating for me is when they try to like they'll give you their opinion, but then it's like if you disagree with them, then you're like the worst person in the world, and they portray you as that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why can't we just disagree and then like enjoy each other's whatever, you know? But... who knows?
Mm.
Well, that was not planned at all, but there's your music 101 for the morning this morning.
So, Will, what are we talking
on when
about?
You listen to it.
What are we talking about?
So, we're going to start like we always do with coronavirus things and updating the coronavirus world.
The corona.
It does seem that some states are going downward, right? They're spiraling down. So, that's a good sign. I think, was it last week we talked about how it was supposed to be the worst week, or was that the week before? I don't know if that was
the kind of
last
2 weeks. The week before.
I think it was the week before.
I think it was the week before because Georgia's about to be caught up.
Yes, because we're 2 weeks behind. Which, according to Brian Kemp, we've already hit our peak. So
really?
Yeah. And see, I've heard different things. So I don't. That's what I've heard, so I'm not going to.
Okay.
But there's some new things going on. Okay, so there's two specifically that happened. So we'll talk about both of them separately. So the first thing's going on is that there's protests within the states.
Okay.
Specific states. I don't have specific state. I know for sure there was one happening in Colorado because I listened to it this morning. But there's different protests going on. And basically the whole idea is that they want to reopen the country. We need people to get back to work. They need to make money. So there are these protests. What's interesting about that and Eric, you can correct me on this because I think you also watched that briefing, is that Trump was asked about these protests and specifically asked about the protest in the way of, because he also released the three plans, guidelines or whatever, which we're going to talk about next.
Yeah.
And he was asked whether or not the people seemed to be going against that and they're protesting, but Trump seemed to be okay with it. Which is, I guess, how that politics work. Yeah. But he was like, oh, well, you know, go for it.
Yeah.
So what's your opinion? What's your stance on the protest a good thing? Should we be...
Man.
Should we all go outside with our picket?
Well, definitely not. But I think...
signs and...
Ooh. So it is a right to...
It is. People can do it.
To protest peacefully. Okay, so
and they're doing it from inside their cars, so... Right. At least they're not all, like, ganged up on the streets.
Sure. So... It's okay to peacefully protest. Now, when you start, like, hurting people or, you know,
yeah.
or telling people they can't peacefully protest, you start getting into some real problems. But I think the common sense part of it, though, is we're under some sort of government mandate to stay in our house, right? Like, we shouldn't be out to be out, I guess. And I don't know that necessarily is an infringement upon my rights. Does that make sense?
Sure.
It's kind of like the whole church thing. Like, they're telling us not to go to church, not because they hate Jesus, right? But because people are dying of the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing about the protests. And I know that, you know, Trump said that they were 6 feet apart when they were protesting. And it's like, that seems so trivial. You know what I mean? Like, they're all there yelling about the same thing. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I'm not going to tell them not to protest because... It's such an American thing to do.
Yeah.
So I can't tell people to go against their blood, you know? Like, that's what they're going to do. But I wouldn't do it personally because I think the government mandate to stay where you are is something that we should.
Yeah. I'm really not surprised by either. Like,
no.
I don't know if it was, like, last week on here or the week before. I'm pretty sure I even said that. I was like, people are going to start, like, coming out of their houses anyway and doing what they want to do.
Yeah. I think you did say that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'm in the same boat, I think. I think it's just, because partly I don't think it makes sense in my mind, because it's like the governors are trying to do what's best for the people, and then it's like the people are like, well, I know what's best for me, and I need to provide for my family, which I also get.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I don't know. I guess we're on the fence. Now, would I personally go out and protest? Probably not. But that's, I mean, not.
Yeah. I mean, I get why they're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People want haircuts. I mean, what can we say? I would like a haircut, you know?
That's important. I need mine dyed desperately bad.
That's important.
Very badly.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just interesting. It's an interesting idea that, because I heard it this morning compared to the Boston Tea Party, that people were out protesting.
Yeah.
As if we were back then with, and I'm just like, I don't know that I would take it that far. That seems a really big comparison to me, but, so I don't know. Any other comments or anything?
Not about that, no. I just think we're in a time of unrest in a lot of a lot of ways. Because I was looking up a lot of the, so I don't know if y'all have heard about the Virginia protests. Have you heard about those?
No, I know about the gun thing.
Okay, so in Virginia, the governor of Virginia basically was like, he made strict gun control laws on the state. So basically he's imposing some really, I don't know that they're, I don't know the specifics about that, but I'm reading this article from The Guardian, and it says people were chanting, "We will not comply." Gun rights activists packed the streets in front of Virginia's state house where the governor, Ralph Northam, had temporarily banned anyone from carrying firearms. So it's one of these things where I think there were like over 20,000 people that protested, and it's suspected that they all had a gun on them, which I think is interesting. Now, it was a peaceful protest, right? But
just in case.
Yeah. So it's like, I think it's funny because, you know, we're so concerned about people protesting because they're losing their jobs or whatever. But then other people are like, who cares about that? You're not taking my guns. You know what I mean? So I think that's just interesting that we have different types of people in the world with different types of opinions.
Down here, it'd probably be both of them, probably.
It would be. Well, but it's like our rights. Like I have a right to have a gun, you know. Which is funny because the sales of guns in Virginia has skyrocketed.
Yeah, everyone's trying to buy a gun.
Because they feel like, whether it's true or not, I don't know it because I don't know the specifics. But the whole premise is I won't be able to get a gun, so I'm going to go buy a gun. And gun salesmen are like, yeah, sure, that's whatever. Funny. You know, they're making some money. But
yeah. So the governor who is Ralph Northam, signed a slate of gun control measures into law Friday that will increase background checks, limit handgun purchases, and establish a so-called red flag law.
I'd be interested to know what that red flag law means.
I'm not sure. People are not too happy.
But see, that's the problem with politics, because as much as let's say we had that law in front of us and we could read it, word for word, probably like 77 pages, but let's just say that we could read it. The problem with that is that we're not going to read all 77 pages. We're going to read an article that tells us what the 77 pages mean and go, this is not okay. Like, that's what we'll do.
Okay, so the red flag law would allow authorities to temporarily seize the firearm of someone deemed a threat, a measure that was strongly opposed by gun rights advocates who swarmed the streets around the Capitol on Monday.
Yeah, see, but how do you determine that?
Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah, who defines?
Because nowadays, too, it's like you can just get blamed for something.
Right.
Exactly.
Somebody can just call you out on it.
And then they'll come to
your house and
they'll
take
your weapons.
Yeah. What I think is also interesting, though, is Trump is pretty hard right now on or against the Virginia, right?
Yeah.
He tweeted out, liberate Virginia, as he did a bunch of states.
Yeah, sure.
But he's mentioned it a lot in his briefing about how the governor's trying to take away the Second Amendment from Virginia. So I think that helps a little bit. Helps the people protesting.
Yeah.
Gets them a little more fired up.
It's crazy. crazy times.
Which is also interesting. Something else Trump has said about the protest, or in favor of the protest, I guess, is that he said the governors have taken the lockdown a little too seriously, so maybe they're imposing it. And I think the only problem I'm finding here is that if we don't lock down, we're going to be in the same situation we're in now in 3 months from now, because the virus has just gotten back out of hand.
Yeah.
Right? So if we just go up and reopen, then we're just going to do the same thing again and then in 4 months. I think that's what a lot of people are saying, is that we just need to be slow about it.
To me, it's not just that. It's from the very beginning, Trump has been very, hey, the governors are going to decide. The governors are going to be in control. The governors are going to do what they should do. And then to comment on how they're doing it, and then inciting people to almost rebel against the governors, it makes me just go, what are you doing? Like, I really wish Trump had said, hey, this is what you should do. Because then he would have the leverage to say, hey, you're taking it too far.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, he wanted all the governors to do it their own way, and now he's criticizing the way that they're doing it. So I think that's a little...
He's like, I didn't mean to do it that way.
Exactly. And I'm like, you shouldn't have left it up to them. You should have just told them what to do.
Right.
Instead of tweeting, you know, liberate yourself. And it's like, that sounds very aggressive. But that's just my
it
opinion.
Does. So speaking of trying to reopen the country, the government, or specifically Trump. Now, did Trump actually write these things? That's the real question. Who knows?
That's debatable.
Who knows? Anyways, but he put out these three phases to reopen the country.
Yeah.
Now, it's important to note before we dive into the three specific phases that the government can't enforce these on any state.
Right.
They can just encourage the governors to do these things. So, for example, Brian Kemp, I know, has said that we're going to participate with the three things that the government has put out, whatever. They're encouraging the states to do so, but that doesn't mean that the states have to. They can reopen tomorrow if they want to. But I suspect most of them will follow these things.
I do too.
So before they can go into these phases, so things that happen before they jump into phase one and two is that they have to have a downward trajectory of influenza-like illnesses within a 14-day period and a downward trajectory of COVID-like syndromic cases reported within a 14-day period. So they have to be at least 14 days where the cases are going down before they can even jump into phase one. So when we're thinking about phase one, not much really changes when they jump into phase one. It's really about the same thing. I think the only thing that changes is that you can, I mean, is it just still says minimize non-essential travel. You can see all this, by the way, at whitehouse.gov/openingamerica. But there's really, I mean, everything else is, it just says, I guess they can reopen. It says to encourage telework still, return to work in phases, close common areas. I mean, there's really nothing that changes within the phase one. So
phase one is just kind of what we're doing already.
I really just don't see how, like, I know it's like in phases and that should work pretty well doing it that way, opening everything slowly and not just everything's open back up, because it would just flare back up again. But I really don't see, even in stages, how we're going to keep it from flaring back up no matter what.
Yeah.
Because I feel like as soon as people get out and about, I mean, even if it's, you know, making sure everybody's still staying 6 feet apart and only, you know, 10 people together or blah, blah, blah. Even if they're taking those precautions, it's still going to go back up in numbers.
I don't know that we're going to see it go back to normal. I don't know that you'll ever see it go back to completely normal, but go back to anything sort of like what we've seen before, until there's a vaccine or so. I think it's Governor, how do you say the New York Governor?
Cuomo,
yeah, I think so. Who said something to that effect, that it's really nothing ever is going to go back to normal until there's some sort of vaccine because of that.
Yeah, so, we've never, like, we don't change the way we live because of the flu. Right?
Exactly.
Like I know that some people don't bring their babies to church in January or February because they don't want them to get sick. Like, that's common sense, right?
Yeah.
I just think people should exercise their mental ability to have common sense.
Yeah. If you know you're more at risk, don't get out. Yeah. Don't get near people. Yeah. If you're a pretty healthy person and if younger, you're probably fine.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're invincible.
Sure.
But, like, there's a small, horrible part of me that's just like, you know what? Just let it run its course. It'll go away faster. Just runs its course. And then you get up immunity to things.
Well, I'm hoping that over time we find out that a lot of people had it and just never experienced it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I think that's just my opinion. I'm not a doctor, but I think that when the research comes out, they're going to say, based upon this pool of people, everyone most likely, and I say everyone loosely, has had it, and they just didn't have any sort of
effect. They were saying that they thought that it was probably here in, like, November and December, and we just didn't know it.
Yeah.
I know several people that had all of those symptoms in, like, December, January, went to the doctor, tested negative for the flu, and had all these problems.
Yeah. And I think this
week, myself was sick, like, all of December, and, like, hacking my lungs out constantly.
Well, and I think this week, some states are projected to have more people recovered than sick. So, I don't know. I think we're closer to the end than we ever have been.
I hope so.
So phase one, gyms can open also on phase one. So phase two, we get a little bit better. Schools and organized youth activities can reopen. Visits to senior care facilities and hospitals should be prohibited. Large venues can operate under moderate physical distancing protocols. There's somewhere in here that says something about the people, a number. Oh, there it is. In phase one, you're still thinking of 10 people, right? Can't meet over 10 people. In phase two, it says social settings of more than 50 people where appropriate distancing may not be practical should be avoided unless precautionary measures are observed.
Yeah.
So
we ain't coming back to church for a while.
No.
And then phase three is when we sort of slowly get back to normal even then.
Okay, so let's think about this, okay?
Yeah.
Just for fun. So let's say we're in phase two at some point in the future, and we decide that we want to have church, okay? Does that mean that we have church in one area of the church and it's streamed to all the other areas? So that means there's people in the sanctuary, there's people in the fellowship hall, there's people in the social hall, there's people in the MAC building, maybe there's people in the MAC building worship area, and there's people in the gym, and we separate it based on groups of 50. Is that possible?
This sounds horrible.
I mean, is it possible? Sure. Is it logical? I don't know. Because I think it's possible, but I don't know if it would be the smartest thing to do.
So do you just not have church?
I mean, depends on your definition of church, I guess. So
because church is meant to be a social gathering of people.
Are we doing it? Yeah, and so I guess if you have 50, you're doing something. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it depends on. Would I do it? Probably not. I would wait.
Yeah, and it'd be hard too, because like here in the Mac building, with people coming in and out like the same doors constantly. Even if you separate throughout the church, if people are coming in the same doors and going to the same areas.
What about the parking lot? They all go out to the same parking lot and to their cars. I just think in our minds it may sound good, but when you're thinking logistic wise, I don't know that it is. So what I'm more interested at is in phase two, do you reopen the youth ministry? Does youth ministry come back?
No, heavens no.
You don't think so? Even with the schools and daycares reopening?
No.
What would make us different than a school?
Well, because the church isn't meeting.
Oh, so you're saying because the church isn't
meeting. Yeah, the church isn't meeting. We can't meet.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I just don't see that that's...
Well, I think you also have to...
Because we're not a church. Does that make sense?
Like, sure.
There's people in here, they're youth part of a church, but we're not a church.
Yes.
Like, this building is not a church.
Right. Well, wouldn't that go with your 50 per place then, too?
Huh?
Like, they're not individually the church?
Well, again, it's one of those things where it's like, once you start saying, hey, well, the youth ministry is going to meet, but nobody else is, you start going into some territory that I'm not sure you want to go into.
Well, I think it's a slippery slope.
Exactly. Then people are like, well, my group's less than 50. I'm going to meet. And it's like, well...
Yeah.
Now, would I take them to youth camp? Probably. But I don't know that we would meet as a group. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I feel like that's different. I feel like that's very different.
Yeah. We're talking hypotheticals, obviously, right?
Exactly.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, like if it gets to the point where, you know, you can have either, or still 10, you know, up to 10 people, or if it gets to 50 people, I wouldn't be surprised if some of like the, which I don't know if they are doing this or not, but some of just like the smaller groups in our church, or like Sunday school classes and things like that, just start meeting together by themselves.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't.
I mean, if they have small, I mean, numbers, I mean,
I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah, do what you want.
I mean, there's definitely no Sunday school class that has 50 people in it, so.
Yeah. I don't know.
The rich class is close.
Yeah, I was going to say,
really?
Yeah. Because they knocked down that wall in that room, so like now there's all these people in there, but we'll see. We'll see.
Who knows? Okay, so that's it for the three phases. Any other comments or anything?
No.
No. Okay, so Trump has also made some comments on faith. Made some interesting comments.
Yay.
That I did not see coming when I was watching the briefing. I think this was Saturday night. No, maybe it was Friday night. No, maybe it was Saturday night. I don't remember.
Was it not yesterday?
No. It was at least Friday or Saturday.
I don't remember. Oh, yeah, it wasn't yesterday. It was probably Saturday.
So he made comments about faith, and basically, what it started with was that he retweeted some tweet about whether or not people were going to treat, what was it, Muslims or somebody the same as they treated Easter, or they treated Christians during Easter Ramadan?
Is it Ramadan? Yeah, I think it's Ramadan.
I think so. And basically, it came down to where our Christians treated unfairly, and Trump says yes.
Okay.
Trump seems to think that Christians are treated unfairly within this country. Now, it's interesting to me. I don't know that I've ever thought about it. So I'm curious, what are y'all's thoughts? Do you think that Christians are treated unfairly? And while you're doing that, I'll find that tweet, to be exact.
Are Christians treated unfairly?
Within the United States.
Okay, so they're not killing us yet, so is that?
I feel like we're made fun of more than any other religion.
I think that's fair.
Okay. I think that's part of it. So they're not killing us yet. They're not throwing us in jail yet. They're not putting us in the stockade in the middle of town yet. They're not dipping us in oil and lighting us on fire to light the streets yet. So as far as like persecution, I don't know that there's much. But I will say that we're made fun of. I think that's that. I think we're laughed at. So I think those two things can go together, but I think they're different.
Yeah.
I would say that people look down upon our thoughts and ideas about science and family and all that stuff because it makes it seem like, they make it seem like we're sexists and we're patriarchal people that dominate women and all this stuff and... we're bigots because we don't agree with the culture at the moment. So I think we're treated unfairly as far as having a voice to people. But at the same time, I don't know that we face some of the probably unfair thoughts about Muslim people and the somewhat racist things that happen to them. Does that make sense? I feel like they face more of that than we do. They face more of the uninformed and racist ideologies that are pointed towards Muslims that aren't pointed towards us at all.
Yeah. So the tweet he retweeted was this: "Let's see if authorities enforce the social distancing orders from mosque during Ramadan, which is April 23rd through May 23rd, like they did churches during Easter." Mm-hmm. So I think we talked about this last week. Churches were, or not churches, governments, especially in Kentucky, were writing down the license plates of the drivers who went to the drive-in churches or went to church. And I guess that is the, or would people do that same thing at mosque, which led to the whole unfair. I don't know. You just caught me off guard. Because I just don't know that I've ever thought about it. I don't know that I've ever felt that I was treated unfairly.
I've thought it. I personally haven't had issues.
Sure.
But I mean, not like we're persecuted type thing. Like, sure. That's not it. But what I said, we're just kind of like the laughing stock.
Yeah.
Of things.
Well, you know, when you mentioned that, the first thing I think of, and because we talked about it earlier, is the Taylor Swift video, which I don't even remember the name of it now. Basically, where she tells everyone to shut up. What does that
mean? You need to calm down.
Yes. And how she openly basically mocks Christians in that video.
Yep. Like we're a bunch of
And if you think about that, if she was to do that to Muslims,
oh gosh,
she would have gotten destroyed.
It's like with them, so I think they're taken more seriously, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe some people are scared, but I don't know if they're scared of them. But I feel like people take them more seriously.
And they have a lower view of women.
We're
than
just
we do.
A joke. Yeah, and we're just a joke.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I also think because there's not. To be fair to the culture, there's not only one or two mainstream Christian ideologies in the world.
Yeah,
like there's like a billion. Yeah. There's like a billion. Whereas in Muslim faith, there's like two.
Sure.
So, I could see where people are like, oh well, you know, you have the Church of Christ, you have the Baptists, you have Presbyterians, Methodist. You have Methodists, you have, and then if you want to go more radical, you've got.
Would you put Catholics in there?
I would put them in the.
I asked that question on purpose. You don't have to answer that.
I would say all the groups I just named, and then I would say Catholic, and then I would make another distinction and say Mormons other things like that I wouldn't call Christian, but. But yeah, there's a lot of those.
Some strong.
Wow, really?
There.
You believe the same thing?
That's some strong.
It is not.
There.
It's fully not.
So I don't know. I it was caught off guard. So is it good for Christianity for our president to be making comments like this? Is this a good thing for us? Does it push us in a good direction, or is it bringing maybe unneeded attention, or is it bringing the right attention? I don't know.
I think any time someone takes up for God's people. I think it's a good thing.
I agree.
Yeah. I don't think it's bad attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. I
but at the same time, you've got to think.
I think it would be different if he got up there and was like, Christians are the number one best in the nation.
They're the bestest.
Yeah. Then I'd be like, oh, okay, yeah. Let's.
Well, I just, I hope in my heart, and I think we talked about this last week, that all religions are treated fairly.
Yeah.
Whether we agree with it or not.
Yeah.
Because once we start thinking that we're the elite in this world, then we start losing credibility in a heartbeat with the little people that we have credibility with left. So,
yeah, I agree.
If you have the thought process that, well, it's Christianity or nothing, well, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Yeah.
Because that's not how the world should be. So,
yeah.
So what's that?
Well, let's move on to the theological biblical side of this podcast. Before we do that, Eric, tell us a little bit about the CSB Bible.
Okay, so the CSB Bible is my primary translation of the Bible. I love it. I've turned to it and never looked back. So basically what it does is a dynamic translation of the Bible. That means that it's taking the readability of something like the NIV. Most people are familiar with the NIV. It's very readable, very easy to read and understand. And it combines the idea of it being very accurate, so that means true to the original languages, true to the original text, like the NASB does. I don't know if you've ever read that. I read it a lot in seminary. It's a great translation, but they mash these two ideas together, and it comes out with this beautiful translation called the Christian Standard Bible, so it is the most accurate and the most understandable Bible that you can purchase, and you can purchase it today. It's a good one.
You can. You can do that.
I have some on the bookshelf if you want them.
.com.
You better hope that it's CSB. Let's see. Yeah, you're right. I think it is CSB Bible. But is it .com?
I'm pretty sure it's CSB Bible. It is .com. See, I was right. I should have never questioned myself. Jeez. Yeah, well. It is. But yes, so we are sponsored by the CSB Bible. We're thankful for them.
Yeah.
Last year we did a giveaway. Maybe we can do something like that again this year. Yeah. Who knows?
Who knows?
Anyway, so we are going to move to a theological idea now, or biblical idea, about the Lord's Supper.
Okay.
So before we do that, Eric, why don't you tell us what the Lord's Supper is?
It's a supper done by the Lord. That's
completely false.
Is it, though? I mean, Jesus did it.
It's not completely false. So,
I mean,
sure. Maybe it. Okay. Go ahead.
Open your
give
Bible.
Me the, give me
Open
the real,
your Bible.
Give me the real meaning.
Okay, so we have Jesus shortly before he's to be crucified, and he's sitting around a table, and he breaks the bread and passes the juice to all of his disciples and says, "This is my body broken for you. This is my blood poured out for you." And they take it within themselves, and they have no idea what they're doing in the moment, but Jesus is communicating to them, "Hey, when I'm gone, you do this in remembrance of me." So basically, now in the church, we do the same thing. So we pass around bread or tasteless crackers and around the church. And it's usually accompanied by scripture. We do it corporately, so we do it together. We don't do it on an individual basis. I hope we get to talk about that. But we do it on a corporate level, so we do it together. We break the bread, and we take it, remembering Christ's broken body for us. Then we do the same thing with the juice, or if you're more liberal with that term, the wine, whatever that is. And you take that because Christ spilled his blood for you, and his blood covers our sins and all that type of thing. And so you take it. And you do that corporately, it's just a beautiful, to me, it's a beautiful moment where we can step back and remember the life and the death of Jesus Christ as a corporate body.
So let's read a passage, 1 Corinthians 11, 1 Corinthians 11, verses 17 through 26. So let's start here, just to back up what you said. I think you did it well. Good job.
I appreciate that.
Good job up there. So it says this, "Now in giving this instruction, I do not praise you, since you come together not for the better but for the worse. For to begin with, I hear that when you come together as a church, there are divisions among you, and in part I believe it. Indeed, it is necessary that there be factions among you, so that those who are approved may be recognized among you. When you come together, then it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. For at the meal, each one eats his own supper, so one person is hungry while another gets drunk. Don't you have homes in which to eat and drink? Or do you despise the church of God and humiliate those who have nothing? What should I say to you? Should I praise you? I do not praise you in this matter. Verse 23, "For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. On the night when he was betrayed, the Lord Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, broke it, and said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, also, he took the cup after supper and said, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes.'" Okay, so there's the biblical argument for what you just said, which I think is correct as well. So there's an argument going on right now, or a debate within the Christian community, over whether or not the Lord's Supper, and Eric's smiling at me right now, over whether or not the Lord's Supper should be partake or should be done over a virtual means at home or online. And I think we both know of churches who are doing it and who will not do it. And so I'm curious, what do y'all think? What do y'all think? Should
y'all want to go first?
No, I don't.
Why do you not want to go first?
Because I'm pretty sure Jenny, you can go first. Do you have any opinion? What do you think?
I don't really have that much of an opinion on it. I mean, if you want to do it and can do it, then I guess go ahead.
Okay. Who wants to go first?
It's kind of our only option to do it right now, I feel like, because we can't all get together and do it. Right.
Sure. So I'm pretty sure we disagree. I think.
Well, go ahead.
Am I personally going to do it? Probably not.
So I would say to wait until we're gathered back together.
Okay.
And why I would say that is because of what Paul says. I think you have to do something. Let me find the verse here. Maybe it's further up.
I just know I'm not going to go buy grape juice just for that.
Yeah. So in verse 20, he says, when you come together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Paul is assuming that we're coming together and doing it in fellowship with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So what, in my mind, you have to define that, or in your mind, if you're doing it virtually, you would have to be saying, okay, well, that means we're coming together in a virtual means. And I just don't know that I don't know.
So you disagree with your boy Matt Chandler on this?
I do. I just would withhold. I would withhold from it and wait.
So in your mind, there's no exceptions.
No, I'm not saying that.
What are you saying?
What do you mean when you say the exceptions?
Like you have to do it in a corporate setting. You're not budging on that. There's no exceptions. Because that's what you're saying. You're saying there's no exceptions. We have to do it together.
I'm trying to think in my mind if there would be an exception. So like widows, those who are stuck at home, maybe.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's what... See, I just... I just
push... So the answer's yes. No, under no circumstances. No. Because we're under a pretty special circumstance.
Yes, yeah. But I don't know that we're...
Okay, what about baptism?
Yeah, okay, I would push back pretty hard there.
On what?
It depends on what part of baptism you're talking about.
I'm talking about,
like
baptizing
the mode
part.
Of baptism. Are you talking about like the timing, where it happens?
Yeah, where it happens.
Is there
should it be done corporately?
Yes, 95% of the time it should be done corporately.
Okay, so now we've gone down from 100% to 95%.
Are there specific exceptions to each? Yes, for individual people. But I think when you're talking about the whole church as a whole, I would push back on it. So, for example, when we're thinking of baptism. Say there's somebody on their deathbed who would like to be baptized. Obviously, you're not going to immerse them because they can't move, so you would use sprinkling of water. And you're not going to say, hey, the whole church come into this one room to baptize this person. But I think it's a very, very rare exception for those things to happen. I think it's the same thing for the Lord's Supper. If there is somebody who is maybe a widow or somebody who can't leave their... I don't know why I keep saying widow. Somebody who can't leave their house or in a nursing home or something, then... I would be more okay with it only because they can't leave. But I think in my mind, us withholding from it, whenever we come back to do it again, it makes it even more special, I think. Now, but does that mean somebody's doing a sinful thing if they do it now? I don't think so. It's just my opinion.
So what about the Ethiopian eunuch?
Yeah, he got baptized with Peter. What are you asking me?
He just got baptized in a river.
Yeah.
No one was there.
Yeah, but that's not fair because the Ethiopian eunuch is going to a place where there's no churches.
Okay, so that's another exception.
If they're going to a place where there's no church.
Yeah, is that another exception to your list?
For baptism?
Yeah.
No, because I don't know that that's... Okay. Okay, so if somebody came to America...
This is your question! I'm just trying to figure out what you mean!
No, because you're coming up with these exceptions that would never... If somebody came from the middle of Africa somewhere that had no church, they got saved here, and they got baptized here because going back, there's no place to baptize them.
But we baptize them at the church.
Yes, you baptize them at the church.
Oh, okay.
I would.
Okay.
I mean, you can baptize as a river in the river if you want to, as long as there's a community there, your church is there, the majority of your church is there.
Sure.
I would say.
Okay.
I mean, if you're able to go be baptized at the local church and you're not, or I shouldn't say at the building.
We know what you
as
mean.
As long as
we
with the local, local church. Yeah. I'll push back pretty hard on that. Yeah.
Okay. I just wonder what you think. That's all I'm asking. I'm not trying to trip you up.
I just push back on the Ethiopian eunuch question because I just don't think that happens today. I think that was a unique situation in that context.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a whole other conversation. But
I don't think so.
I would probably agree with you.
Oh my gosh.
I would probably
all of that.
This is what he does all the time.
I would probably agree with you. Like you said, the Lord's Supper is something that you do corporately together. It's not something that under usual circumstances you would do by yourself. Because there's not, number one, there's never an example.
No, there's not.
Like, it's not as though Paul was in prison and he was like, someone bring me a cracker and some juice. Like, he never said that, ever.
No.
And he never even had remorse for it. Does that make sense? Like, oh, I wish I could come and be with you so that I could partake in the Lord's Supper. He never does that, right? Like, and he's in prison a lot. So, like, he never does it, ever. So, he's even in isolation or in a place where he can't be with the local church.
Yeah.
And he's still not even talking about it. He's like, yeah, that's not even in the ballpark. So I think you have to take that into consideration. But I also think that we have a problem in the church with taking concepts that are key and downplaying the keyness of said concepts. So think about our view of sin in the church. It's pretty low, I would say. I would say that we don't take it as seriously as we probably should. Our view of the holiness of God and his righteousness, I think we probably take a lower view of that than we probably should. And I think that we do that same thing with baptism and the Lord's Supper.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, baptism has become something that we do before we get to the music Like, that's bad. Like, that's bad, right? Like, we shouldn't do that. We should be celebrating, clapping, hooping, and hollering. You know, we've got the little party popper things that shoot the confetti. Like, that's what we should be doing, not, woo, who's next?
Not, let's get it out of the way.
You know, like, let's get to the music. Like, no, that's not what we should be doing. And we do the same thing with the Lord's Supper. You know, so me, just going off my own experience, from the time I was saved till about the time I was 19 or 20, Lord's Supper really didn't mean a whole lot. I was just kind of going through a motion to do it. And I don't know how anybody else feels because I'm not them. But I feel like, in general, this might be the sentiment of a ordinary church member is, well, you know, this is just what we do every 6 weeks. You know, so then you get into the argument, well, should you do it every week or should you do it every 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks or quarter or whatever it is? Anyway, but no, I don't think we should be taking the Lord's Supper. I just don't. And again, I think you're onto something because you said I don't know that it's a sin to be doing it.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
I just think that I understand and I sympathize with the want to do it, right? I sympathize with that. But and it's something you said a couple of weeks ago. You were like, but how beautiful will it be when we finally do it again together?
Yeah.
And again, I think this may be something that we even do in heaven together.
Yeah. Oh, I think so. In Revelation,
remembering the sacrifice of Jesus. So
yeah, you see that image.
And it'll never be done in our mansion individually. So there's just that. So
it's true.
So no, I'm with you on that. 100%.
I just think you get into a slippery slope when you're starting.
Yes.
So that's why I push back a lot on this idea of exceptions, because there obviously are exceptions or exceptions
sure.
to anything.
Yeah.
But anytime we're like, well, this is an exception. This is an exception.
Well, and I would also say that it's more okay to do a baptism than the Lord's Supper.
Really?
Yeah. Because people are still seeing it. Like, they are there seeing the act
sure.
of it happening.
Okay, okay.
So I'm more okay with that because it's something that they are participants in it, so I'm not going to say they're not. But they're
sure.
more participant. They can be more participant in that action than they can this other action. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
that's interesting.
I'm more okay. I'm not saying I'm absolutely okay with it, but I'm more okay with it there than I am with the Lord's Supper. I'm a little more hard shell.
I would agree, I think.
So
be okay
baptism's
with that.
A little different, not much, but just a little bit, because I still think that there can be a corporate celebration style of experience with someone getting baptized versus doing the Lord's Supper together. And I think that we have probably a little bit more scripture to lean on there as far as the Lord's Supper than we do with like corporate baptism, if that makes sense. So.
There was something I was going to ask you about Lord's Supper. I don't know what it was.
Okay.
Just never this deeply thought about any of this. I'm just like, you'll put me first. I'm like, I don't know.
No, it's
sure.
Okay. That's okay. No, it's fine.
But at the same time, I mean, pretty much agree with y'all now, but
yeah.
It's like, I feel like if you're going to do it at home, you do have to take it very serious. Like if you are one of the exceptions,
mm-hmm.
or if a church is deciding to do it at home, it needs to be a very like taken seriously thing.
Yeah.
And you're doing it because you yourself want to do it,
mm-hmm.
not because it's just the thing to do.
Right.
Because in reality, most people, if we did that on like online right now or at our houses, it would just be a going through the motions thing.
Yeah.
People sure. would not do it or need to like say they did it, or they just sit there and watch it happen and nobody would take it seriously.
Right. And I hope that it's a moment where we can, instead of doing it, we can give people a deeper understanding of what it actually is.
Right.
Because I feel like you're adding to the, I can't think of another word right now, but carelessness to it. Like, oh, well, this is just something we do, whimsically do, blah, 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 and they move on. I feel like you're adding to that narrative if you just start sending juice and bread to people's house. But that's just my.
Well, I think, yeah, opinion. I agree. I think if we're not careful, we could make longing seem like a bad thing. I don't know that it is. So, like, longing to be back together is
yeah.
not a bad thing, right? So, we shouldn't just try to solve that issue to get rid of that longing or longing to do the Lord's Supper or doing
yeah.
those things. So, that's not a bad thing. It's okay to long. Because I think one of the worst things that could happen from this time when we gather back together is if we have people who say, well, I can do all this from my home anyway, so there's no point in me going back. And I think that's a terrible thing. And that's why it's, and I think it's what you see Mark Dever at Capitol Hills Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., who they're not doing any services because of that idea. Now, do I think he's taking a little bit far? Yes. But he's not doing anything to keep that longing. They need to be longing to be back together.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's different views.
Yeah, different views.
But again, I don't think you're doing any sort of sinful thing if you decide to partake of the Lord's Supper now.
And at the same time, the last plague that we went through didn't have the internet. So it's easy for us to look sure. back and say, well, churches didn't meet then.
It's right.
Like, yeah, well, you didn't have the internet.
You didn't have an option.
You didn't even have dial-up, bro. Yeah. Like, come on. So yeah.
Yeah.
Is that all you have?
That's all I got.
Okay, I have one more thing, and okay. we'll be done, okay?
All right.
So last night, I watched the first two episodes of the Chicago Bulls documentary. Did you see that it was on? It's called The Last Dance on ESPN.
Do you watch basketball?
Not really anymore. I used to. When I actually played, I would watch it all the time. But I haven't watched it in a while.
Okay, but we all know who Michael Jordan is.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's basically about MJ and his journey from college, like his childhood through college into the pros and eventually to his six championships, 6 for 6, right? And it's just fascinating to see all of these people's opinions on this one team. Like, this team was together 6 seasons. And they just won the championship every year that they were together. So they won 3. Michael Jordan took a break because when you're so good at something that it doesn't really matter what anyone else is doing, you kind of have this frame of mind, I'm going to go do something else. So then he did something else for a year and then was like, yeah, I'm not as good at this as I was other stuff. And then he came back to basketball and won 3 more in a row. So, which is just insane. It's just insane. And it's just this story, and it makes me remember. So I only remember watching Michael Jordan play one time when I was a kid, when I was 8, because that was his last championship year. And it was good for me to look back and see that, because I don't really watch the NBA. And I think if you were to do the research, no one really watches the NBA at all. And I think it's just good for people to look back and be like, wow, that was special. So even if you don't like basketball, I encourage both of you to go watch it.
How long are the episodes?
Huh?
How long are the episodes?
I think they're 45 minutes long. So they did 2 back-to-back, right? So it was 2 hours. But they had commercials and stuff. It may be closer to 30 minutes than 45 minutes. It may be like 40. I don't know. But it's not a full hour. So you're not committing 2 whole hours to MJ, even though he's worthy of it, you know. But anyway, so y'all should...
The Last Dance.
Y'all should watch it. It's called The Last Dance. It's on ESPN. If you have the ESPN app, I'm pretty sure you can watch it for free, so you can just download it, because we obviously don't have cable, but we have the ESPN app, and we watched it last night, and it was so good. Oh, I'm just
Let's
sitting
check
there,
it
like,
out.
And it was ending, like, the last episode was ending, and I was like, I could watch this till 4 o'clock in the morning. Because not only do you get Michael Jordan's side of it and Scottie Pippen's side of it, so far, you also get the Bulls owner, the Bulls GM. They talk about the Bulls GM at the time, and I think he died 2 years ago, and he's just the worst. Like, I saw a meme this morning that was like the 2 most hated people during the corona, and it was like Carol Baskin from the Tiger King and the GM of the Chicago Bulls at the time, because he wanted to get rid of everybody after that season. Right?
Why?
And he did. You know, it was over. So, anyway, even if you're not a basketball fan, even if you hate the NBA like me, go watch it. MJ forever.
MJ. Okay.
MJ's better than LeBron. Nope. And so
we will end there.
That's just settled.
Yeah. We are for the word, for the truth, and for the church. Thanks again for listening to the Pastor and Intern podcast.